Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I am under attack by pollen.
Okay, well, that's Michael Footer. Each episode will cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 84. Stadia is alive and well, and other optimistic thoughts.
I love this. Other optimistic thoughts. I get the sense that we're a little incredulous about Google saying, guys, don't worry. Everything's fine. I'm not bleeding out over here. Just need a Band-Aid.
It's a flesh wound. Yeah. Your arm's off.
Yeah, exactly. It is exactly that.
This is a problem.
Yeah, but we'll get there. We'll get there. But we are kicking off with a much, much briefer roundup of Epic versus Apple.
You mean we're not going to spend an hour talking about Epic versus Apple?
I think this is maybe 10 minutes, maybe not even that.
Not even that.
So we are in the second week of the case. Apple, or Epic, is expected to wrap up its arguments, I believe, on Monday, turning the floor over to Apple. Mm-hmm. So that should be very interesting. Let's see what's going on. So we learned a couple of interesting things. Epic sold 3.3 million NFL skins. Remember when it had that big NFL partnership where you could buy a skin for every team in the NFL? I know football is really your passion.
Yeah, I'm super passionate about football, yeah. And except in the fact that I'm definitely not passionate about football. Yep. I'm passionate about hockey.
I know. No hockey skins yet, though. I don't think.
You know what? That's probably okay, because can you imagine a bunch of Fortnite skins, like, skating around a map?
That'd be hilarious.
Oh, now so, I want to see it.
Well, now I'm upset. Just go into creator mode and do the thing.
I'm not that creative, unfortunately.
So in November, December 2018, they sold a number of skins related to NFL teams. They were the equivalent of about $15, obviously. V-Bucks don't translate exactly, because if you buy more, you get a better deal.
Sure, of course. So, but that was like per skin?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, that's the thing. And this
is like Final Fantasy 14 nonsense.
Exactly what I was going to say. Again, those license skins, I don't know, honestly, because I purposely avoided Fortnite during the Marvel period. Because I'm like, if I go in there now, I'm going to be spending hundreds of dollars on Marvel skins for a game that I don't really play, just because they look so good.
Yes, that is, in fact, what you did with Smite.
I didn't spend that much money on Smite. Magic the Gathering is a different story, and we are not talking about that today. They made, for the NFL partnership, $49.5 million gross revenue.
Whoa!
So, imagine what they made on those Marvel skins. Now,
those
granted,
Marvel skins probably made them double.
Yeah, at least, because there were so many of them, and there were people I know... We know people who were in there and, like, buying a ton of them.
Yeah, they were just really excited about it. But, I mean, those were also avid Fortnite players and...
Sure, absolutely.
And, like, that's cool.
But, now, remember, that's not all money that's not translated directly into the bottom line, because there are huge licensing fees associated
absolutely.
With any of this. I am sure Marvel took their fair share, which could be up to 50%.
50% is honestly what I was thinking. I would imagine it's 50%. That's not the only thing that we learned from this week, though. We also learned, from documents. Mm-hmm. So documents have revealed that Epic's Coalition for App Fairness was formed because Epic internally acknowledged that a fight between two mega corporations was a one-dimensional, unsympathetic position.
And that is taken right from the documents. They pretty much acknowledge that, no, we're not sympathetic, and it's very one-dimensional.
It is exceptionally one-dimensional, something that you and I have been talking about.
Yeah. It's one of the interesting things for us... is that, yeah, we've learned stuff. We've certainly learned a lot of the data here. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, we've confirmed a number of the things that we suspected as analysts. For instance, from the beginning, we were talking about the Free Fortnite campaign. Mm-hmm. And we were talking
as
about the Coalition.
Propaganda.
Yep, and the Coalition for App Fairness as being smokescreens for real motives. And I was on the Engadget podcast this week as well, and this was a big source of the conversation about the lack of sympathy that consumers should have.
This is not the case, though, because of how well it's been spun, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Well, and Epic was aware, and this is all in those documents for forming the Coalition for App Fairness, that press coverage was going to likely be negative, and the Coalition for App Fairness, because you're pulling in more parties, you're broadening the reach.
It's
right?
not even just about pulling in more parties, it's pulling in sympathetic parties.
Developers.
It's pulling in developers.
And that was the thing that was going to skew...
The quote-unquote little guys.
Yeah, skew in more neutral and positive coverage, because suddenly Epic is... fighting the good fight. And look, part of me does believe that no one else could wage this battle right now.
I would absolutely agree. Not even just part of me agrees that, all of me agrees that. I know that based on Sweeney's values that he's communicated over the years, like, this is something that's very important to him as a human being. Not just important to the corporate bottom line, but actually important to the CEO.
This is really drives home the point for me that if one of two things had happened, we might not even be here today. One, if Epic had managed to secure the deal that Amazon gets, which Apple denies that Amazon gets, which is very interesting.
That's very strange to me. That's honestly very strange to me because isn't there documentation that actually proves it?
I thought there was, and I think The Verge covered that.
That's what I thought.
So when we talk about that, I was... That wasn't a report. That, to me, was based on documentation that was seen. Now, if I'm wrong, please do correct me.
We don't mind being corrected.
Yeah, we don't mind being corrected. But my understanding was that this was a confirmed thing. So when Apple on the stand said, no, 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 everybody gets the same deal, that kind of surprised me. The other thing is, you know, last week we learned about the deal that Sony gets.
Yeah.
And how, from Epic, not from Apple.
Right.
Where... if there's a ratio in place that ensures that there is an alignment between playtime and money spent in the game for,
yeah.
And this is more about cross progression than it is about cross platform. Although they're right. For Fortnite, they're hand in hand.
Well, especially for Sony, they're hand in hand because cross platform is not something that Sony actively wants to support.
No, unless, and from their perspective, clearly, when they, this is the beautiful part. Oh, we want to protect people. We want to make sure that our community is intact. No, you want to get yours on the bottom line. Like, be honest.
Like, we don't, or we're gonna look at your statements and we're just going to see, we're going to read between the lines. We're not stupid.
From my perspective, if Sony had come out and said, look, we need to make sure that this, while we believe that cross-platform and cross-progression are good for players, in a vacuum, that we need to ensure that the resources that we are putting in are coming back to us in form of a fair revenue share.
Right.
So that we can do good for our players across our offerings. If they had said that and been transparent, that would have been an understandable thing.
Absolutely.
And yeah, you would have had some people be like, oh, Sony's just interested in money. I got a surprise for you, man. Capitalism. Everybody's just interested in money and protecting
their
piece of the pie.
There is no ethical consumption under capitalism, as we all know. So, Mike, is there anything else that came out of this week's proceedings?
I think that there was... That was the bulk of it. We're still waiting to find out if Apple is going to be successful in throwing out at Xbox VP Lori Wright's testimony.
That would bum me out.
It would bum me out, too. I mean, at the very least, we learned quite a lot.
We
right?
did. We learned a ton, which is excellent. And we never get this kind of information because this industry is so incredibly secretive.
Yep.
I wish it was more like the film industry where we would just, like, be fed box office results. But for games?
Yeah, and on top of that, we knew about projects a lot earlier. For some reason, and this is the interesting difference between film and games, when films go through massive changes, think about how many times that Uncharted movie started up and failed. Directors, actors. I think Mark Wahlberg, who was playing Sully in the Uncharted movie, was originally slated to play Nate. Like, that's how long this has been going on.
It's been a time. It's
now, granted, he's a relatively young Sully at this
point. Yes, he is.
But that's just one of those things. I don't know that the game industry has that tolerance because what we've seen about development hell, think about Duke Nukem Forever. Like, it became a joke. So I'm wondering if culturally, game players, because there isn't that whole shit, the way the organization is structured. Now, maybe that changes if we move to a unionized system that mirrors movies. And then you have IP that gets signed and you have creative teams that are assigned to the project.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't easily start and stop games. And I'm not saying it's easy in film, but it is so much harder to work with to shift code bases around and shift programming. And then you have engine considerations.
It's a creative intent. It's a different creature entirely because, you know, like I lived in Vancouver for a really long time. I know what the film industry looks like because, like, I have so many friends that are involved in the film industry. So it's not an apples to apples comparison, obviously, but it would be nice if the information flowed a little more freely.
Sure. Absolutely.
Even
I agree.
Just for us analysts.
I absolutely agree. So that's kind of the big stuff from this week's trial. I'm interested to see what happens when Apple takes over and starts calling their own witnesses and starts making their own case. Mm-hmm. I don't know if YGR, Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers,
calling her YGR now.
I feel like she's super over this at this point, and I'm very interested to see. And the beautiful thing about a bench trial is she can poke back at the witnesses. And
I love that. I love it when she can ask questions.
She does. And, you know, I sat in on a couple of the early hearings and stuff. I have a lot of respect for her. I think she's extremely smart. I think she's extremely savvy.
She's extremely well-versed.
There was one thing that popped up last night or yesterday that I didn't throw into the show notes. Apparently, Apple had, I don't remember how this all played out because I didn't have a chance to dig into it. But Apple said Roblox doesn't make games.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that headline.
And then Roblox likes, yeah, we don't make games. We don't have games. And I'm sitting here thinking, because we'll get there in the quick hits.
Oh boy.
That there are studios, game studios that are popping up out of Roblox games. So why was Roblox financial calculus on being like, okay, yeah, we don't make games?
Okay, I've thoughts on that.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. So what we'd like to talk about, though, is a lawsuit, actually the conclusion of a lawsuit between Gree and Clash of Clans maker Supercell.
This one has potentially enormous ramifications for the industry.
It really does. So just as a, you know, and are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Just as a primer, there was a federal lawsuit between Gree and Supercell in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge has awarded Gree $92.2 million in a patent suit that found Supercell that had infringed on 6 different patents. All right, so I'm going to go through some of them here. So, quote, a server and method for transferring an object between two users, as well as the communication module for sending and receiving requests for transfers from other players. It sounds like trading.
Yeah, it sounds like item trading, which you can do now in games like Pokemon Go.
Yeah, absolutely. Quote, a server and control method for selecting cards from a selection and using them in battle against an enemy character, the selected item being replaced by another option for a future turn. So that's Clash Royale's card replacement mechanism.
That's what it sounds like. So when you play Clash Royale, if you've never played it, you have a limited number of cards. You have...
But you can replace them as you go and play cards as you're, you know, assaulting your other...
So if you play a card from your hand, it's immediately replaced with another card. Whether or not you can play that depends on how much power you have accumulated.
Yeah, absolutely. So both of these seem really strange, and like I don't understand how they've been patented, but maybe it's about implementation. If the implementation is exact or close to exact, then I can understand it. Mm-hmm. But as a concept, conceptually this sounds very strange. So the other patent in this is a control method for a touchscreen shooting game, which first displays an effective shooting range, which then detects whether an attack target is in range and commences the attack based on a command from a player. So, like, this would not just impact Supercell's games.
For me, this is, if you're playing a top-down game and you drag something on and the reticle turns red to show that it is... within range, or white to show that it's not. That's what that sounds like to me. And while this might not impact every shooter, like I noted in the, it might impact a number of games, real-time strategy games.
So I feel like this comes down to implementation. So if the implementation is one-to-one in the sense that there is, you can tell that this has been infringed on based on the mechanical patent as opposed to the conceptual. Like, it doesn't make sense to patent ideas, right? This isn't an idea. This is the actual implementation of that idea. So it's got to be, that's what it's got to be here. So the award is in addition to a patent trial that awarded Gree $8.5 million last September.
Yeah, so this is $100 million from Supercell at this point in patent infringement.
So we will have to see how this is going to end up impacting mobile games as a whole. I don't think that it's going to have much impact because I believe this does come down to mechanical implementation and it not about the concepts themselves.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know. I think that the implication here is potentially far reaching. And this may give Gree a corner on the market.
We'll have to see.
At the very least, there might be a chilling effect here.
That I can see. Absolutely. I can see that this cooling things off a little bit in terms of having similar games on the marketplace using similar mechanics. Mm-hmm.
And we know that the app market especially is just a clone fest.
Well, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
We're
going
to talk about Voodoo.
Yeah, we are. All right. So now it is time for Investment Interlude. Wait, hold on. Isn't it called M&A Minute? Wait, no, it's not anymore because as you point out every week.
It's never a minute.
So Investment Interlude. It's alliteration interlude. About money.
Yep. We talk about capitalism here, people.
Yep. So Sennheiser is getting out of the headphone business.
Weird.
Yeah. The company has sold that unit to Sonova, a Swiss hearing aid maker, for 200 million euro, but don't expect the Sennheiser name to just disappear. Sonova has licensed it out permanently as part of the deal.
That's really interesting. But you know what's even more interesting than that? Let's talk about Embracer.
Oh, Embracer.
Embracer had a few moves this week. Just a couple. 4, 5, 10 moves. THQ Nordic has... So Embracer has acquired another 4 studios and opened one more.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
That's so many studios. I don't even... What even is happening? They're turning into, like, video game Disney. Anyway, THQ Nordic has acquired Appeal Studios.
Shout out to Walt!
That's upsetting, but also funny. Anyway, so THQ Nordic has acquired Appeal Studios, founded in 2018. Appeal currently has 55 employees and is working on a, quote, innovative open-world sci-fi action-adventure. Appeal was founded by the creators of 1999 hit Outcast.
Did you ever play that?
Sure did not.
It was good. It was along the lines of Blackout. Was that the one? Like the Blizzard? And so it was like a side-scrolling...
Do you really want me to do the math for how old I was in 1999?
Moving on. THQ Nordic has acquired Kaiko, the port studio behind Red Faction Guerrilla Remastered, Legend of Kay Anniversary, Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition, and Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning. So here we go. Obviously, this is a natural pickup for them.
It is, because that's a lot of their games.
That's a good port studio, by the way. Those ports are all really good. Mm-hmm. It was founded in 2014, currently has 10 employees.
THQ Nordic studio Handy Games has acquired German studio Massive Mini Team, founded in 2018. The 20 team members are, quote, working with Handy Games on several titles. Massive Mini Team will be fully integrated within the Handy Games organization. Now, remember how Embracer Group works is they have a number of different business units that are essentially like studios picking up other studios, and they just kind of, they just arrange themselves.
It's like a studio turducken.
Okay, that's like the worst way of putting
this. Just cram more studios right into other studios, which are crammed into other studios.
Great, this is visceral. How about we move on?
You don't like the word cram?
No, I don't like the word turducken.
Oh. Would you like to eat a turducken?
Never.
Would you like me to cram a turducken onto the Thanksgiving table?
No, I would be very upset with you if you made a turducken.
Cram! All right, Amplifier Game Invest has acquired Swedish studio Framebreak, founded in 2020 and employing 5 people. Framebreak is developing new IP focused on, quote, highly replayable co-op experiences for PC and console.
The acquisitions totaled at 71 million SEK.
I didn't convert them.
You did not convert them. With additional consideration of 53 million SEK for a total of 124 million SEK.
So here, I'm going to teach you guys a secret right now. This is an opportunity for me to have a teachable moment. Did you know, and I just learned this because I have a website that I used to use for currency conversion. If you go into the calculator app on Microsoft Windows 10, mm-hmm. the hamburger at the top left,
I'm familiar.
You click on that and there's a currency option.
I know.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah.
I just learned about this.
Yeah, I've used it a couple of times. I often forget that it exists.
And it's updated like every 15 minutes or something. So it is current conversion. So anyway, really sorry about that, Amanda.
That's okay.
It was a week. I converted everything in the massive earnings show for Monday.
Well, that's good because there were a lot of things that needed to be converted from Yen.
So wrapping this up, THQ Nordic has announced the opening of a new studio, Gate 21, in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Gate 21 will, quote, enable THQ Nordic GmbH to have world-class 3D characters using the most advanced character and facial rigs in development projects. It seems like it's a studio that's going to be focused on support and doing capture.
But that's really interesting to me because a lot of THQ Nordic's games are very, like, low-end. Not low-end when it comes to graphics, but they're not, like, they try to be high-end, but they're not quite there. Maybe this will help bump them up.
Well, THQ Nordic, when I interviewed Lars way back when the acquisition started happening, when Nordic Games came out of nowhere and picked up all of the THQ back catalog, including Darksiders, I asked, I'm like, what are your plans here? It's like, oh, we don't have any big plans. We don't want to make really expensive games. And while that has shifted a bit, they have become more ambitious, certainly. And obviously with these acquisitions, they've broadened their ambitions.
I would be curious to see how many acquisitions that Embracer Group, formerly known as THQ Nordic AB, has had over the last 3-4 years.
Many.
Gosh, there's got to be so many. It's got to be numbering in like close to 100.
It has to be close to 100, right? At this point, I think. Yeah.
Wild. Okay, so Hidden Leaf Games, founded by Riot and PUBG veterans David Lee and Bao Lam, has scored $3.2 million. The new studio is currently working on a 3v3 MOBA called Fangs, with design led by Steve Ginsu?
Mm-hmm.
Feek, who created the Dota All-Stars map for Warcraft 3. Lightspeed Venture partners with Vermilion Ventures, Logan Margulis, formerly of Riot Games, Eden Chen, CEO of Pragma, and Alex Paley, VP Product at Scopely. Actually, I think I've met Alex Paley, joining in to raise that money as well. So, very cool.
Yep. Here's an interesting one. Hero Capital. We sat in on that first Black Sun, was it called? Black Star? Something. They had
They had a
venture funding round table.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was I don't think it was super accessible for us because it was more for investors and for studios, but it was neat to learn.
Yeah. They've announced a total of $6.4 million in funding for two studios. The first is Twin Suns, a new AAA studio led by Tim Longo of Halo and Tomb Raider history, Forrest Swartout, Large from Hitman and Tomb Raider, and Jeff Morris from Gears of War and Unreal Tournament. They're working on a next-gen AAA cross-platform game in a new IP, and 15 additional industry veterans are going to be joining the studio this summer.
Fervor is an, quote, instant games ecosystem that helps developers publish on multiple platforms without much friction. Fervor currently has more than 1 billion unique players on billions of devices.
These names. Tumblr, Grindr. There's also VRV. There was Verve. Remember that?
I remember Verve, yeah.
These names. Mm-hmm. These names. No vowels. What do they have against vowels?
I don't know. Maybe vowels hurt them in a...
They're like vowel vampires?
Could be.
Weird.
I don't know.
Epic and Blizzard vets have announced a new studio, Lightforge Games, located in Raleigh, North Carolina. The team, led by Matt Shambari, Dan Hertzka, Nathan Fairbanks, Glenn Rain, and Mark Hutchison, have raised $5 million from Galaxy Interactive, NetEase, Dreamhaven, Maverin, 1UP Ventures, and other angel investors from gaming and tech.
Lightforge is an all-remote studio that is, quote, on a quest to change how RPGs are played. The first title will be a cross-platform social game that will allow players to create worlds and tell stories with, quote, unprecedented freedom, otherwise known as an RPG metaverse.
Yeah, that's my take on it. It's like they didn't say those words outright,
they don't need
but
to.
That really sounds like they want to create some kind of like RPG sandbox.
And this is also partly why we need to be talking about the whole Roblox thing.
Absolutely. Aptopia has announced a $20 million Series C funding round. It was led by ABS Capital Partners with existing investors, including Blossom Street Ventures, participating. Aptopia specializes in competitive intelligence in the mobile space.
It was founded in 2011, and the company says that it will use the new funding to grow its addressable market through, quote, investing in ethically sourced data outside of mobile apps. The intent is to use that data to provide clients with better understanding of consumer engagement with their competition.
All-Star, which is, I was reading up about this. A clipping service for Counter-Strike Go and Dota 2 has raised $3.85 million in angel funding. So the funding was led by New York Angels with support from Studio.VC, Emerging Ventures, and J Ventures. Other angel groups, Harvard Business School Alumni Angels of Greater New York, Miami Angels, Gangels, Sand Hill Angels, and a number of individual investors also participated.
All-Star uses its own app and Discord to facilitate cloud-based clipping and soon will cover Fortnite, League of Legends, Rainbow Six Siege, and Valorant. All-Star also automatically tweaks and refines the clips to make them look as good as they can.
So the way this works is you download their app, right? And then you link it to the, you give it, you join their Discord and you give it access. And then in the chat, in the game, you type a bot command, exclamation point, All-Star. And then it creates a clip and sends it to the cloud. And it could be like double the FPS you got in the game because it's somehow monitoring your game and grabbing the footage. It's really, really interesting. It's why it's limited on the number of games. So their idea was like, oh, anybody can make really cool looking clips.
Interesting. So Krafton, the company that owns PUBG, has acquired mobile game studio DreamMotion. DreamMotion has released three games since its 2016 founding, including Ronin, The Last Samurai. No terms were disclosed.
And that wraps up Investment Interlude.
Which means that it's time for a break. Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.com. And we're back.
And that means it's time for quick hits.
Weird. That's extremely weird. Okay. What's first up on our list of extensive quick hits?
Okay. Bloomberg reports that Sony CFO Hiroki Totoki, I love that name,
so good,
said in a briefing to analysts that PS5 shortages could extend into 2022. Additionally, he says that even as supply increases this year, because that is going to happen,
yes,
it will not outpace or match demand.
It's not surprising. Everything that we know about what the production pipeline looks like for many tech manufacturers, this is impacting everyone, including Sony.
Absolutely.
So remember how we were talking about the mobile space being full of clones?
Uh-huh.
Voodoo.io has announced that it has reached, wait for it, 5 billion downloads across all its games. And you may recall Voodoo from the story about Hole.io and Donut County. I remember our children were very keen to download Hole.io, but not Donut County. And we fixed that very quickly.
Yeah, I wrote a story for Variety. I did this whole deep dive because Goldman Sachs has a huge investment in Voodoo. And they were not at all happy when we wrote a story about how Voodoo was engaging in unethical behavior. Now, it's legal behavior what they're doing,
right?
But it is extremely unethical.
Yeah, and it's morally questionable.
It is. So essentially, I don't often plug the book on the show, but I'm going to this one time. I spoke to Brenda Romero about how they protected their game from being cloned, and so there are some tips in there about what you can do if you're in the middle of making a game and you have some very innovative or very interesting core mechanics, ways that you can still make sure that your game is protected. While you need to show it off, right?
Right. So when you have those vertical slices, that is something that does disproportionately affect indie developers, and especially marginalized indie developers that are coming from, that are developing in countries that might not protect intellectual property in the same capacity that, say, North America and, you know, Western Europe.
Sure. Tends absolutely.
To. What else have we got, Mike?
Resident Evil Village has moved 3 million units in its first 3 days.
Sold 3 million units? I mean, I guess Dimitrice was like,
I don't know.
What's up?
Or Beefy Chris.
Or Beefy Chris, sure.
Yeah. They also updated stats on Resident Evil 7, which has now shipped 8.5 million units life to date. I think Village is going to outpace it.
I have a feeling that Village is going to outpace it as well. People slept on 7, not for the most part, but because it was so different, it was such an enormous departure from what Resident Evil has been over the many years that it's been around that people were pretty reticent. But, you know, after the success of Resident Evil 7 and the story and everything like that, people have been pretty keen on Village.
And also, there is something that they've done really interestingly with Village that is a reaction to 7. 7 is super scary. Like,
it's so terrifying.
It is absolutely terrifying. And part of that is the setting and the claustrophobia of being in the Baker estate and those walls feeling like they're closing in.
I mean, not so much for me. For me, it's just being in a really scary house.
Moldy, nasty, gross house. But they acknowledged that Resident Evil 7 was too scary for a lot of people. And while they were very proud of that, they also said, hey, we want more people to experience our game. So they reacted to that. I think leaning into the Lady Dimitris, like the internet's fandom over her, that makes it a little less scary. It's like, oh, if you want her to step on you, then that's not scary. That's winky face.
That's winky face. He actually did wink.
Yeah, I sure did. They also did the whole puppet thing with mm-hmm. the four major villains of mm-hmm. the game. And then even at the beginning of the game, it's got this Tim Burton Coraline-esque introduction to the story.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I played the first bit of the game. Mm-hmm. And it's not nearly as scary as going into the bayou and getting stalked by people who look normal.
I think that's part of the problem here is that the true horror for me, like, and not to go too deep into horror, but listen, if you listen to this podcast and you want to know my thoughts about horror, you should at me on Twitter. I love talking about horror. Horror scares the crap out of me, but I love it so much. Mm. So when it comes to the things that are truly terrifying, the mundane tends to be truly terrifying. Things that look like they should be quote unquote normal, but have that undertone, that sinister undertone, and the unknown of where that sinister feeling is coming from, that creates the tension, the dread. And Resident Evil 7 it's really interesting because it takes that tension to the next level and it stays there.
Yeah.
It doesn't stay there the whole game, obviously, because that's not sustainable for a horror game. Because you don't want the whole game to be just tension. The best horror is always you're building up the tension, then you're easing down a little bit, you're giving that sense of relief, and then you're building back up to the next set of tension.
Yeah, and my understanding is that 8 does that really well for the most part. I will say that the best way to get a sense, if you've not had any interest in playing the first person Resident Evil games until 8, and you want to get a feel for 7, that demo that's still available, the beginning hour demo, there is one thing it does in the basement. First of all, there's only one enemy in that entire demo, and it's in the basement, and the only way to get the best ending is to not get hit by that enemy, which is very difficult, because what happens is, when you go to leave the room, you see the door is barred. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something in front of it, and you see Jack, who is the patriarch of the Baker family, lean in and give you this evil grin, like, through the crack in the door. So you've got to deal with this enemy and avoiding it, because you really don't have any weapons at this point. Mm-hmm.
Is what makes it even scarier, because this is about your personal survival.
Exactly. And then you've got to kick this door, because it's very hard to get out of that room. And that's the tension. Of course, you're dealing with it in first person. So unlike a third person game where you might be able to see an enemy coming up behind you.
It's more than that, though, because first person creates that empathetic thread between you and the protagonist, whatever that protagonist happens to be, which is why it is so challenging for so many people to play first person shooters, because of that overwhelm of empathy of like, I am doing this. These are my actions. I am not me. I am playing somebody else. But also at the same time, it is still that feeling of me. So whatever happens to Ethan happens to me, right? Because it's in that first person. It makes it so much scarier. It makes it so much more horrifying when bad things happen to Ethan.
Okie dokie. Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that, you know, they're being very careful about not showing what Ethan looks like.
Mm-hmm. They're doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
And despite the deviant art concept art.
Yeah, and that people seem to think is real. It's very interesting because one of the things I noticed at the very beginning of Resident Evil 8 is all the mirrors are covered over.
Yes. It is very interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So as much as Mike and I would love to talk about Resident Evil, and I would love to talk about horror until the end of time, we need to move on. So Brazilian esports group, Ints, since since you criticized me earlier.
I wasn't criticizing. I was poking at their name.
Anyway, INTZ has announced, and yes, I said it, Zed, I am Canadian, has announced the launch of its own studio, Apollo Games Lab. The team's first game, Apollo in Outer Space, hit PC and smartphones this week.
Yes. I love this story. And so shout awesome. Out to Josh Ling, who is a listener of the show. Adopt Me, Roblox's most popular game, has spawned an entire studio. Uplift Games describes itself as, quote, a modern remote-first game studio based in North America and the UK, and, quote, a place where unforgettable AAA-scale experiences can be created with an independent spirit by people who live happy and healthy lives.
So, remember how I said that we needed to talk about the whole Roblox thing?
Let's
talk about Roblox as a platform, because I can understand where Roblox is coming from, because they themselves are not actually making the games. They are enabling the games.
Mm.
They are the platform upon which these metaverse games are being created. So I can see it logically, because this is not Roblox making this game. This is an independent studio creating this game within the platform that is Roblox.
Yeah.
Roblox might have started out as just a game that you could make games in, but it doesn't really have, like, from my perspective, it doesn't really have its own game mechanics. It just enables other people to make those games.
They're also trying to split hairs between the word game and the word experience.
That one's weird to me. I think that if they're going to do anything, framing the conversation around Roblox being a metaverse and Roblox being a platform, because to me, Roblox is a platform. It's not a game. But that's my opinion.
And I can understand where you're coming from. Absolutely. I think it's interesting to me how much time has been spent on the stand during this trial about defining what a game is in order to split these hairs.
It's been weird trying to talking about what a game is, considering that we are so enmeshed in talking about games and playing games and living and breathing this industry every single day. It's just, but what is a game?
Yeah.
Philosophically. Tell me what a game is.
Well, a game.
Do you know what a game is?
Nobody, in fact. In fact, Mitch Dyer, yesterday we were talking about this after I saw the whole Roblox thing. And he said, 2011, our games are 2021. Our games, games.
Fair enough. All right.
All right, moving on.
Moving on. Techland has made some new hires and promotions on the road to Dying Light 2's 2021 release, which we reconfirmed with the developer
this
week.
Yes, we did.
So Anna Kubica is the new Dying Light brand manager. She will be joining Techland from Ubisoft, where she managed Watch Dogs, South Park, and Just Dance.
Dimitri Maturosyan will be handling international distribution and product sales. He comes from more than a decade at Blizzard, where he managed the Eastern markets and Central and Eastern Europe.
Katarzyna Lizika, I think I might have gotten that, is Techland's new PR director, and has been promoted from within the studio.
Yeah, and there are a number of art promotions and other things. It's interesting because this all comes... It was The Gamer that wrote that interesting expose on... Mm-hmm.
And that was a tough read.
It was
a tough read, but it was exceptionally well done.
It was, and you have the CEO is like, yes, I have a picture, a photo of a naked woman in my office. What of it? I mean, it's tasteful. He's a famous photographer. It's like, okay, yes.
And so put it in your house.
Yeah, put it in your house.
Put it in your house. If you are so proud of this piece of art, then it doesn't belong at the office. The office needs to be inclusive, and that does not foster inclusivity.
Yeah, it's interesting. They've clearly had some challenges getting through the Dying Light 2 process.
I am still excited for Dying Light 2 because I very much so enjoyed the first Dying Light. And everything we saw of Dying Light 2, I think, was it two separate E3s that we saw, 2018 and 2019?
I remember you and I ended up back in back-to-back meetings there and interviews in 2018.
I saw it again in 2019, okay. I think. It's been tough. And you know what? I hope that they're making better decisions around their internal culture and ensuring that it is more inclusive, because it's just going to end up being messier than necessary.
Tripwire Interactive, that's the
Speaking of messy games.
Oh, Killing Floor 2. Killing Floor, Killing Floor 2.
And also Maneater.
Maneater. So Tripwire Interactive, the studio behind Shark Sim Maneater, has announced what it calls a, quote, next-gen work model. Employees will be able to create their own hybrid in-person and remote work plans. And Tripwire says that this will, quote, foster a more productive and creative environment, but also add a layer of diversity to their staff. It's going to broaden the talent pool since employees will no longer have to be in the office or even located in Georgia, which is where they're located.
Oh, this is wonderful. That's a great option for them to broaden the scope of the kinds of developers and creatives and support staff that are going to be able to work on their games.
Indeed.
Very cool. Xbox and Tencent's Timmy Studio have created a new partnership. Timmy Studios, which developed the very, very popular Call of Duty Mobile, will be working on new games with Microsoft. No additional details have been announced.
We also have another Microsoft story. Microsoft has announced plans to implement both text-to-speech and speech-to-text for Xbox Party Chat. This is an enormous accessibility move. I smiled when I saw this.
It's wonderful news. I'm so glad that Xbox continues to prioritize accessibility. And I mean, they are behind the user accessibility documentation that we spent a significant amount of time digging into, several months ago, I believe at this point. But it is wonderful. And I'm really happy for the team at Microsoft.
Well, that leaves you with the last one, Amanda.
Oh, God. Okay.
You're going to have to say this word.
I don't want to say this word. This word annoys me. There are not many things that annoy me in this life, but this is one of them. Discord has announced a rebrand. That is not annoying. Slightly tweaked Clyde logo. Still not annoying. Brighter blurple color. Deeply annoying. And a new word mark. As well as announcing that they have hit 150 million monthly active users, which is up from 140 million monthly active users announced in December.
Yeah, the new rebrand looks nice. I mean, I've seen it on desktop now. I've seen it on my phone. The icon has changed. Clyde, who is like a little controller, is no longer trapped within his word bubble. I read that whole blog post.
Listen, as someone who has worked in branding and has created her fair share of logo marks over the years, including ours and including, you know, my own stuff for Ready Player Mom, I get it. I love the explanation around rebrands. I wasn't particularly attached to Discord's original branding anyway, but I like their new word mark, especially. The word mark is really nice.
It's fun. It's playful.
It is.
Also, I really like your shirt. It's got gray and blurple.
It's not blurple. It's actually purple. I'm wearing a Fortnite shirt right now. What the heck? Lead us out, Mike.
And that was Blurple. Crickets.
Wow. Does anyone want to purchase one footer? I will sell him to you very cheap.
I'm changing the name of the episode to just Blurple.
You're the worst. You're the worst.
Blurple sounds like an 80s cartoon character that everybody really hated. Blurple was the Jar Jar of He-Man.
Ew. I hate it. Blurple is such a bad word. It's bad. It is a bad word, and I don't like it. Anyway.
No, I don't have, like, there are some words that begin with BL that are okay. There are a couple that aren't. Blurple's one.
You're not saying the other one on this podcast. You say a lot of messed up stuff on this podcast from time to time. We are not saying that one. In fact, we are going to move right the hell on. We are going to move on to E3 Online.
Yeah, so the ESA has announced how E3 Online is going to work. It's going to have an event portal, which I assume is a website, and an app that will have, quote, virtual booths, online forums, video conferencing, and profile and avatar creation. So, I guess they're trying to make it like a digital event.
It seems like it.
And not just, they're going to hopefully avoid the mistakes that PAX Online made, I guess.
It's really difficult to create an online event that is engaging beyond just like sitting and watching a thing. There needs to be some element of exploration.
They're also gamifying it. They're going to be leaderboards.
Oh, for the love of mutt.
Because that's what every working professional attending E3 needs. I know it's not just for press. In fact, I would argue that press aren't even the focus of something like this.
No, press are definitely not the focus of something like this. Okay, so Mike, you have a question in here for me.
I do. I also want to just say that they're also planning on having lounges for attendees to gather.
Okay, well, that's like all fine and dandy.
Yeah. Because there's nothing like getting trapped into a voice chat room of rando game fans for... I want to know how they're going to moderate this shit.
The moderation is the piece of this that I would like to know. Also, it looks like we have an actual question.
Do we? No, it's Greg saying, reach for an M&A Minute Moon. If you miss, you'll land on an investment interlude star.
Aw, that's nice.
That's sweet.
That's very nice from Greg. Okay, so you do have a question for me.
I do. I want you to talk a little bit. I know we've talked about this in the past, but from your experience with Boston Fig, which was extremely well run, does this sound similar, or are they trying to do...
It sounds similar-ish, but I don't know how you do something like that at scale, because there are going to be thousands of fans there, as opposed to just the hundreds that we were dealing with at Boston Fig mm-hmm. at any given time. I think that there might have been close to 1,000 people that might have attended Boston Fig online. I don't actually know what the numbers look like.
But less than E3. It's very safe to say it's very, much less than
much E3. Much less than E3. As we know from being at E3 in person, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people that attend it in person. Can you imagine the amount of people that would attend it as a digital, much more inclusive event
mm-hmm.
that doesn't cost hundreds of dollars in order to attend? Well, thousands if you, you know, loop in all the travel costs for those coming in out of town.
Yeah, absolutely. So
what I like about this, and I mean, I like that there's more of an interactive element. I do think that that is what Boston Fig did so beautifully,
mm-hmm.
is having dedicated booths, having people be able to come up and have a conversation about, you know, either a game, or when I was manning the booth for Hit Save, talking about Hit Save's mission and the work that we're doing with indie developers. It's all super duper important in order to create that. It's, again, it comes down to empathy, right? It's like, this avatar is my way of connecting with other people and talking to them about their games. That's mm-hmm. awesome. And it works in an indie setting. I have legitimately no idea how this would work with not just industry professionals, because for the most part, Boston Fig was full of industry professionals and indie developers and indie game fans. So like, for the most part, it was just like very chill. You're not going to find that with AAA fans.
No, no, I'm really concerned, because I don't know how you announce something. We're going to have these open lounges where people can just go hang out and not even mention the word moderation.
I don't think they're going to be able to moderate it. It's voice chat, more than likely.
Well, that's going to be a mess.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only... Like, listen, if they're talking about lounges, lounges are likely going to be voice-enabled. Like, I can't imagine any other way to do it and have it be something that is interesting. So, I don't know.
Yeah. So, the media will get access on June 7th. The public gets in on June 12th. Through the end of the show on June 15th.
Yeah.
So at least they're giving press an opportunity to, like...
That's 5 days.
It is.
Which is nice.
It is. I think it's going to be a lot. And I think we know that this is going to be another protracted summer of announcements. It's going to be a slog.
This is going to be Jeff Grubb's summer game mess.
Part two. Yep. Everything, as we've talked about previously, is going to be free, despite early reports that the ESA was considering charging. Its membership shot that down out of the sky.
And you will be able to watch and engage on other platforms. You don't have to go through the ESA's E3 official channels.
Amanda, why wouldn't you want to give the ESA your information?
Because the ESA doxed me two years ago. I'm not super keen on giving them any of my personal information. As I said, even when E3 comes back as a in-person event, I likely will not attend E3 again as a member of the press or as an analyst or anything like that. I don't imagine we'll do that. I think we'll go, but I think we'll do our meetings off-site.
Yep. So, yeah. Oh, what a mess.
It's such a mess. And all the ESA has to do is, hey guys, we're really sorry. We really messed up with this and we're going to do better. And they said that we're going to do better, but they didn't have like the apology there. And it's the lack of the apology that is a cardinal sin for me personally. That is my culture. We apologize.
Well, the head of the ESA, Stanley, is it Pierre Louis or Louis Pierre?
I don't remember.
He is an attorney.
Yeah.
And you know how attorneys hate to apologize, because that...
acknowledges guilt.
Stanley Pierre Louis, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it acknowledges guilt. And I have a funny feeling that this is a legal motivation, not apologizing, because even though we all know they're guilty as hell.
Yes.
I don't see anything, to me, I do not see anything the ESA has done to win back the trust of its media partners, which is a rallying cry throughout this. And it was just like, but by that they mean we're going to ignore it until everybody forgets.
Yeah, except that some of us have exceptionally long memories.
Yep.
You know what else I have a really long memory about?
What's that?
How Google cancels things.
The Google graveyard.
Bring back Google Wave.
Roll them dice. Play them RPGs.
Oh, I fucking loved Google Wave. I mean, I don't need it anymore because we have Roll 20 and everything like that. But Google Wave. Google Wave. But Google actually does want you to know something, Mike. Do you know what Google wants you specifically to know? You as a human being? Me as a human being to know?
That it will protect our information and is not an evil corp. No, wait, that's not it.
Yeah, so not doing evil is no longer part of their overall ethos. But they would really like you to know that Stadia isn't dead.
Well, and if they say it, it must be true.
Well, they don't want you to send them flowers because there's no funeral, because Stadia isn't dead.
Oh, brother.
In an interview with Games Industry, Stadia developer marketing lead Nate Ahern says that everything is fine.
Yeah.
And how are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Not dead. Over here, too.
Yeah, not
dead. We have that in common. And Stadia.
You and Stadia have that in common. Yeah. It's true. Stadia is not dead yet.
Yeah.
Stadia would like you to know, or rather, Nate Ahern would like you to know, that the Stadia Makers Program, which is something like ID at Xbox.
Based on their explanation, that sure is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, fine. Okay, cool. Okay, Dairy, okay. And AAA publishers partnering with Google, and given how much paper, wow, how much money Google has thrown at AAA for ports, why wouldn't publishers say yes?
Yeah, I don't see, oh, we got AAA publishers to work with us, they're on board. You gave them $40 million for a port, I think they're gonna say yes.
Yeah, I feel like they're gonna say yes because you gave them financial incentive to say yes, which will help fund R&D and development efforts elsewhere. Because it doesn't cost $40 million for a port.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. Even for some of their largest games, I can't imagine that it's going to cost 40 million bells.
Yeah, the acquisition costs on that. Like, we talked about Epic's acquisition costs last week. I can't imagine what Google's acquisition costs are.
I literally cannot with any of that. That's actually, oh man, now I want to know.
If you have any insight on this,
you should tell us.
DM us for our Signal numbers and we'll chat.
Yeah, that's actually fascinating. Stadia is apparently now led by, quote, longtime Googler.
I hate that.
And Stadia founder Dov Zimring after the departure of the most excellently named John Justice.
The reason why I wanted to talk about this is obviously this isn't a huge hit in the Google thing, but this is not a criticism of Games Industry, which did an excellent interview and led with the headline that... I mean, it was probably the most potent headline out of there, that Stadia is, quote, alive and well.
Is it?
I mean, I read the interview. It was a good interview. This is not shade on Games Industry.
No, that's not what I mean. Is Stadia alive and well, though?
Okay, and this is the point, right? You and I talked about this before we started recording. The way this is being re-reported in the media, often without citing the Games Industry interview, by the way, shame on you if you are citing an interview and not sourcing that interview.
Yeah, seriously. It is something that happens in this industry far too often. You cite your sources.
And you link back.
It's so important for traffic and especially for industry websites that often get... Speaking as somebody who ran an industry-facing website for, you know, a couple years, yeah, it's really difficult to get that traffic to where you want it to be. Take care of your industry sources.
It's
so important. It's so important.
But one thing I have not seen in any of these re-reports, and again, the games industry interview wasn't the place to do this, but anybody re-reporting who is just taking it at face value
instead of giving it critical analysis.
Of course, the guy at Google who is responsible for marketing the program to developers is saying, guys, everything's fine, don't worry. If you're just re-reporting that uncritically and saying, okay, this is a last gasp for them, because if they can't get developers interested, eventually Google like Google leadership is going to look at this and say, we are throwing money, a lot of freaking money at Stadia, and it is bringing no money in. We have killed better projects.
Like Inbox from Google.
And
Reader by Google.
God, they killed so many good projects that were like actually useful. I miss Inbox. Inbox was great.
Like, they have killed projects that people liked.
Not just liked, but were absolutely dependent on. Like FeedBurner.
Right. So this is a statement from somebody whose job is very much in jeopardy right now.
It is. And you know what? I really and honestly do feel for these folks at Stadia. They are in an impossible position. These are likely people that have not just come from Google, but have come from outside Google, that either know the game space or they don't. And everybody's just doing their best.
Yeah.
They really are doing their best with whatever they're given. And when it comes to leadership, I will hold leadership's feet to the fire all day. But the people that are actually doing the work, that are doing the implementation, that are doing their best, man, I feel for them. I really do. And you know, maybe Stadia will pull this together, but you need to fix your business model. Your business model is totes broke.
Yeah. Now, I said in the notes that Stadia isn't apparently, like, so Dov Zimmering replaced John Justice. There was no mention of Phil Harrison in that interview, interestingly enough. I wonder if he snuck out the back door.
Oh, you mean the cooler departed? Potentially?
I don't know.
No, I think that would have been reported on. I don't think that would have been something that just, you know, I don't think he gets to go quietly into that good night. Not after this being a what? This is a third? Yeah. This is a third major launch?
Yeah, according to his LinkedIn, he's still there. He's a vice president is what his title is. So I guess maybe he's above the Stadia program. I don't know. I do not know. But, ugh.
This whole thing sucks. So, it just sucks.
I mean, this is just our opportunity to remind of two things. One, if you are sourcing an interview, cite it, backlink it, please. I went looking today and poking at some of the stories that people had written off of this games industry interview. And I didn't even see games industry's name mentioned in the stories, let alone that backlink and the citation.
That really upsets me. Games industry, like Games Industry and Game Daily, for a long time, like we used to spit backlinks back and forth all the time because Game Daily would cover a story and then Games Industry would cover a story and we would always source each other.
Yep.
And we'd always cite each other. It was so important.
You know, the other piece of this is you do not have to take a marketing executive's word as gospel. You can be critical about it. Yeah, that's fine. Google says Stadia is alive and well. If you are re-reporting that's not the headline. To me, it's talk about the Stadia Makers program. Google leaning on Stadia Makers program as its salvation, or Google still supporting developers despite wind down of internal studios. Like there are other ways to spin that headline. I know that Stadia's alive and well is a catchy headline, but it reads like a how awesome, so awesome.
Right, and I think that it's important that when we are reporting on the industry and we are doing re-reporting on excellent interviews. Now, remember, getting an interview with Google, that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's an exceptionally difficult thing to do. And the fact that Google agreed to talk to an industry-facing outlet is enormous. But at the end of the day, this is a marketing person. This is all about spin. This is not a transparent conversation.
Mm-mm.
That's not what the point of this was. The point of this was to reassure the developers and reassure the public that Stadia is going to be okay, probably, in their eyes. But that doesn't necessarily reflect actual reality, and it's important to be critical when we're doing re-reporting.
Yeah, if you're talking to a person whose job it is to woo people into the ecosystem, you have to understand that they're going to be giving you the position and the statements that make it look best to accomplish their goals.
Absolutely. And that's why the press and marketing and PR are often, like, we're not on the same side.
Nope.
We're not on the same side at all. It's not our job to toe the company line. It's our job to poke at the company line to ensure that people are informed, especially on the consumer side, right?
Yeah.
Industry-facing outlets can report it as it is, because they know that their audience is already going to be hypercritical anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and by the way, this isn't just, I mean, obviously I'm not a Stadia fan. I think the business there is exceptionally poorly run. But I would say the same thing, and I have said the same thing around Microsoft, around Sony, Nintendo, oh, yeah, any absolutely. Major publisher. If you are taking a marketing person's words, especially when they're look at how awesome we are, words at face value, making that your headline, you are doing PR work for them.
Yeah, don't do that. That's not your job. Your job is not that.
You can report the news without being a spin man.
Yes, and it's hard. I know it's hard, especially if you're new and especially if this is, you know, not necessarily your beat. Like, I get it. I really do. I had to go through that myself, my goodness, years ago, where I had to learn the difference between, you know, towing the company line and ensuring that I'm being, like, responsible
mm-hmm.
as a journalist. It took a long time because, you know, I didn't go to J school.
Yeah. Well, and quite frankly, a lot of people in the games in the game side of writing.
In entertainment, just in general. Like, lots of folks didn't go to J school, and that's okay.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah, of course it's okay. It's just, it's one of those things you always have to be mindful of. You cannot get sucked into how awesome, so awesome. And let's define that real quickly before we wrap. How awesome, so awesome is the headline answering the question, how awesome are we? This publisher, this platform holder, whatever. So Microsoft says, we have the best console for the next generation. Or Sony says, our first party games are top of the line. Or Nintendo says, you're going to buy 7 Switches. Okay, that actually might be a really good headline if they had actually said that. But
that's also different. Like, yeah. That's provocative.
I was joking.
No idea.
But if Nintendo said, Nintendo president says, Mario is the most iconic character of all time, and your headline is, Mario is the most iconic headline of all time, says Nintendo CEO. Like, you're playing into how awesome, so awesome. You're not actually reporting the news. You're just doing PR.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important that and this was something that I had to do all the time at Game Informer, is look at headlines, especially from interns, and be like, here's why that headline doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
That headline doesn't work because we are just taking a marketing statement at face value and making it our headline.
Mm-hmm. And that means that you are standing behind that marketing statement.
Yep. Do your own, write your own headline. Be critical.
Yeah, it's important that we're critical. This is video games. Like, at the end of the day, we are not, this is not like, exclamation point, serious business.
Right. Now, the difference is, if someone had done an independent study of your favorite video game mascots and Mario came out on top.
That's different.
And, you know, and your headline was, gamers vote Mario as best mascot of all time. That's different.
Well, it's a different story entirely.
It is.
Because it's independently, you know.
And I would argue, if your entire story is Nintendo CEO says Mario is the best video game character of all time, that's not even a story. Why are you writing that?
Right. Signal to noise ratio.
Exactly.
Anyway, Mike and I clearly have a lot of feelings about these kinds of things, and we are not saying this to be critical of our colleagues at all.
Yeah.
Because it is really friggin' hard to be in this industry as a member of the media. It really is, you know, long hours, and you don't get a whole lot of say on what you write. And sometimes your headlines get written for you by management, like managing editorial, which could potentially mean that it doesn't, you know, it's created for SEO, for shock value, for click value. It's really, it's ridiculous. And, you know, writers out there, you are doing your best, and we know you are doing your best. And if you ever need any help, especially for reporting on the business side, like, you can talk to us. We're here.
Yeah.
We like helping.
I mean, if you wanted to write that story with a punchy headline, I would do something along the lines of, Google uses Ouija board to say it's alive and well.
That's actually pretty funny.
See? I'd click on that. But mostly because I wrote it and I think I'm hilarious.
And with that note, after all of that, oh my goodness. I'm glad that we had that discussion. And this is not the first time we've had this discussion.
No, it isn't. And it won't be the last.
It won't be, because again, this isn't about being critical. This is of our colleagues. This is about, you know, just clarification.
Yes.
Clarification for sure. But this has been episode, what,
84?
Holy crap. We are fast approaching on episode 100. Thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH.
What is with you in H today?
H. You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com, and then you can, like, be alerted when we have new shows and new writing. Although, with all the earnings that are going on, we have taken a little pause from our weekly writing.
Yeah, because it's on top of literally everything else, including my ongoing work with the Washington Post.
Yes, congratulations on that. Your piece about Animal Crossing for Mother's Day was absolutely wonderful. I loved it.
It was adorable. Yes. I very much so enjoyed it. Yeah. You can also, if you you don't want to necessarily read our writing, which is okay, you don't have to.
Make me sad.
You can also listen to us on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify.
I've heard them called podcatchers. Devinder calls them podcatchers.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. I'm not going to call them that, but okay. That's that. I like that. That's actually very whimsical and delightful, but I don't want to take that away from Devinder. Mm-hmm. So you can listen to us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and...
Pocket Sand!
Good old Pocket Sand, and more. I think we're like on every major podcasting platform at this point. Yep. I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
If you are on a podcasting, like if you have that platform and you're like, but I can't find you, just like DM me.
If you want a little virtual economy for a treat, we'll hook you up, baby.
That's really awkward. So if Mike has made you feel uncomfortable in any way, you can subscribe.
Yes, because what you do when you feel uncomfortable is ask for more.
I mean, sometimes. You don't know. That's what people are doing with Lady Dimitrescu.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, I'm just joking, obviously. But if you enjoyed the show, if you had as much fun listening to the show as we do recording it every week, you know, we'd love it if you subscribe to the show. And if possible, we'd love to see a review. We have some really sweet reviews on...
We do.
On Apple Podcasts, and I haven't really checked out too many other podcast platforms, but there are some really, really nice comments. But if you have other things that you want to hear on the show, if you have comments, if you are like, listen, why are you guys so weird? You know, you can like send
us buckle up. That's a long story.
Like, how far in depth do you want us to go?
You can also DM us with questions at either of our personal Twitter accounts or the Virtual Econcast Twitter account. You can send your questions to podcast@fsquared.biz. You can join our Discord and ask us questions there that, as we've shown you, we will definitely cover on the show. If you need an invite to that Discord, hit us up on Twitter and we'll be glad to hook you up. Also, if you are interested in supporting the show, we have a Ko-fi. I really want to know how they pronounce it.
I really don't know. It sounds like coffee.
Yeah.
Ko-fi. I don't even know. It's whatever. We do have somewhere that you can actively support us with dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But please know that your support, even just listening to the show, is enough for us. We are not asking
right.
you to go out and support us because we're going to suddenly be making things that are, you know...
Walled off.
Like, yep. We don't want to be doing that anyway. And eventually we are going to be bringing virtual economy to video.
We have plans.
And live stream more than likely at some point this summer. So, you know, like, buckle up for that. If you think it gets weird in audio, wait till you see us visually.
Woo! So if you do want to support us, it's ko-fi.com/virtual economy. And we will be back in a couple of days with our mega earnings show, 12 companies. We will be introducing financial quick hits because let me tell you.
Financial quick hits.
There it is. She's got it. Perfect. Mwah. Chef's kiss. I freaking love it. Until then, remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, be good to one another, and like hide from the pollen that is ravaging my face.
Okay. Well, we'll see you Monday.